Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. The city of Moscow to host public workshop tomorrow with law enforcement, Idaho Transportation Department, and megalode hauler Mammut, who are bringing 1.6 million pound megalodes to Moscow. Comments and questions must be submitted in advance. House committee declines to override Idaho Tax Commission rules against same-sex married couples, and Idaho has lowest welfare outlay of the 50 states. But first, world headlines from Feature Story News on the Pacifica Radio Network. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho House's Revenue and Taxation Committee today voted down a proposal to reject new tax commission rules requiring married same-sex couples to file separate state tax returns rather than filing jointly. All Republicans on the committee voted against the proposal, as did Democrat Caroline Moline of Pocatello, referring to an Idaho constitutional amendment allowing the state to only recognize marriages between people of opposite genders. Republican Representative Steve Hartken of Twin Falls said, quote, "While we may have individual sympathy for the situations that are presented by these cases, it seems to me that we should look first at the Constitution of Idaho and then the statutes." The tax commission decision makes filing tax returns more complicated because the couples can file their federal income taxes jointly, but must then recalculate the federal income and exemptions before transferring the data to separate state tax forms. The decision also will cost married same-sex couples money because they cannot benefit from tax reductions given to married couples. Nikki Tangen of Boise, who is married to Becca George, told the committee today, "If we're forced to complete two separate federal tax forms to comply with Idaho rules, we'll be spending even more money and still not reflecting our true financial status to the Idaho Tax Commission." Idaho Department of Health and Welfare Director Dick Armstrong told the legislature's Joint Finance Appropriations Committee yesterday, quote, "No one can live as a welfare king or queen in Idaho." The Joint Committee is holding hearings all week on the state's health and human services budgets. A Cato Institute report last year shows Idaho's welfare benefits are equivalent to working for $5.36 per hour. Hawaii's welfare benefits, by comparison, are the highest, the equivalent to making $29.13 per hour, while Washington was in the middle at $13.87 per hour. Last year, 14.2% of all Idahoans received food stamps, a new record, but still below the national average of 15%. In 2001, the percentage of Idahoans getting food stamps was 4.6%. Only 1 in 1,000 Idahoans receive welfare cash assistance, compared to a national average of 1.2% receiving the cash assistance. In Washington, the number is 1.5%. Armstrong told lawmakers, while employment numbers are rebounding, Idaho's lowest wages in the nation are causing more people to seek public assistance. He said, "We are going to see high utilization of public assistance programs. Our public assistance programs are not to blame for the increased use. They are about as lean as we can make them, and our citizens are not to blame." The Washington Liquor Control Board says it has received 50 applications for recreational cannabis business licenses in Whitman County. Of the 50, 11 are for retail licenses, and all of the retail applications are for operations within the Pullman city limits. The remaining 39 applications from around the county are for businesses which plan to combine production and processing in order to reduce taxes by 25%, which in turn could lessen the cost to retailers. Liquor Control Board Director of Communications Brian Smith told the Daily News, it will be heavily taxed, but I think ultimately it will wind up being competitive with the illicit market. The illicit market doesn't have a tax, but once people can grow on a larger scale without concern of being arrested, then economies of scale will drive the cost down over time. Smith said the Liquor Control Board will start issuing licenses in March after a six-month moratorium expires in Pullman. Pullman City Council members voted in September for the moratorium to give local planning officials time to set up local zoning regulations in the community. Pullman Planning Director Pete Dickinson said, "As with every set of zoning code regulations we produce, we're attempting to ensure that activities involved are as compatible as they can be with surrounding land uses in the area." Dickinson said once the draft review he is working on is complete, there will be a public hearing, and after that, the Planning Commission will make a recommendation to the City Council. Dickinson said the moratorium could be extended if the city fails to come up with new zoning rules. Pullman Police Commander Chris Tennant said confessed arsonist Brian Lee Kitchen has admitted to setting other fires in Pullman. Kitchen faces 4 years in jail if convicted. Last week, Kitchen told a U.S. District Court judge he started the fire at the apartment complex called The Grove in July, which destroyed four apartment buildings which were under construction. In exchange for the guilty plea, Kitchen would have jail time reduced, and he would assist law enforcement officials in resolving a number of arson cases going back to 2000. Tennant said, "We presented him with a history of cases, and he was fairly candid in terms of what he was involved with and what he wasn't." Tennant said a list of 9 unresolved cases for the Pullman Police Department and 8 more around the WSU campus were discussed. He said Kitchen admitted to setting fires at 2 garages, 3 residences, 18 vehicles, 2 storage sheds, and 2 bathrooms in Pullman. Tennant said 2 people were injured in a November 2007 fire Kitchen confessed to setting. U.S. District Judge Lonnie R. Succo has set an April 15th hearing date on the plea agreement. Moscow City officials will be holding a 2-hour public workshop tomorrow afternoon with officials from Megalode Hauling Company Mammut, the Idaho Transportation Department, and area police agencies at City Hall. The Dutch hauling company Mammut is planning to haul 3 1.6 million pound megalodes from the port of Wilma near Clarkston to the Calumet refinery near Great Falls starting later this month. Each of the loads are larger than the largest megalodes to pass through Moscow by more than 1 million pounds. The Refinery Reports website says the Calumet Refinery in Great Falls, which produced 10,000 barrels of oil per day as of 2010, quote, processes predominantly Canadian heavy crude oil, unquote, delivered by pipeline from Alberta. City officials are asking that questions from the public for Mammut and other workshop participants be submitted in advance of the Wednesday meeting, which will start at 3 p.m. Writing on the City of Moscow website, Mayor Bill Lambert said, "As we work with our partner agencies and in an effort to facilitate the best information sharing possible on a limited timeline while respecting each of the participants and our community, it is extremely important that citizens submit their comments and questions prior to the workshop so they can be shared and discussed to the best extent possible." The website announcement says city staff will catalog the questions and comments to fairly represent the community's concerns, and as many issues as possible will be addressed at the meeting. The announcement also says the full catalog of questions and comments will be shared with all participants in the workshop. The website gives email addresses for the written communications. That address is info@ci.moscow.id.us. That email address again, info@ci.moscow.id.us. The announcement goes on to say people can hand deliver questions and comments to the first floor of City Hall in advance of the meeting tomorrow, which will take place on the second floor. I spoke with Helen Yost of the Moscow-based activist group Wild Idaho Rising Tide about the planned meeting at City Hall tomorrow afternoon.
It seemed like there were two open forums when Mammoet was bringing in the smaller, the relatively smaller but still giant split megalodes up to 400,000 pounds back in late 2011, 2012. There were two forums. Mammoet wasn't there, but the owner of the megalodes, ExxonMobil subsidiary Imperial Oil, was there, and there was an open forum. What do you think of this statement from Mayor Lambert?
Well, it seems he's a little skittish about public involvement so far into his term, and we'd like to see that opened up quite a bit so that there are more open discussions among the public and our elected officials. You know, most interactions are emergent. If we're sitting there listening to a discussion and questions arise throughout this meeting on Wednesday, how do we have a way to ask them?
Okay. Did you have a way to ask questions at the Coeur d'Alene meeting put on by the Idaho Transportation Department 3 days after the 1.6 million pound megalodes were announced on December 16th? I understand Mammoet wasn't there, but at least there was an interaction.
Yeah, there were information stations, and it was mostly ITD representatives in sort of a divide-and-conquer fashion. Citizens were able to approach them and ask whichever questions they wanted, and it was very interactive, back and forth. That's not at all the situation at this public meeting, where the public can ask questions in advance, but then again, if questions come up in the process of these conversations, we're not able to give our input except for maybe written after the fact and submitted to our various public officials at that point. We think the best opportunity for the greatest education and knowledge of the community is in an open interaction, interactive fashion where it's a public meeting, people voice their concerns, and everybody gets to hear, and you know, new ideas come up in that manner, and everybody is able to share the same information. Nobody's left out in the dark.
Speaking of new information coming out, one of the most interesting things that came out of the week when the Idaho Transportation Department announced the 1.6 million pound megalodes coming through Moscow and Coeur d'Alene was attorney Scott Reed of Coeur d'Alene submitted his comments in a very public way by having them published in the Coeur d'Alene Press. And one of the things he pointed out is that he had actually been involved in a litigation with the Idaho Transportation Department over the very place at one of the points on East Lake Coeur d'Alene Drive where they originally were putting an interstate interchange for access to the National Forest at that location where, and there was a giant landslide and two fairly big excavators, drivers and all, suddenly went into the lake, sloughing off because of the soil content was inappropriate for fill for that sort of heavy construction, and it destroyed a kokanee salmon spawning bed, and the bald eagles didn't come back for years. And Scott Reed pointed out that the situation there is still the same. One of the government agencies decided not to build that interstate interchange there on East Lake Coeur d'Alene Drive, and now the Idaho Transportation Department says it might build a temporary on-ramp just for these three 1.6 million pound megalodes. And Scott Reed was pointing out that the soil consistency is still in such a way that landslides are quite possible because there is so much organic matter in the soil, and as proof that there's a lot of plants, shrubs, and trees growing out of that point. So my question is, do you expect any of these sorts of issues to crop up with the proper type of discussion surrounding the megalode transport, the part of the trip that goes through Moscow, Latah County, and this general area?
Well, yes, it seems inevitable that these kind of questions would crop up. The people that were working on that previous construction project were not, they didn't have the right credentials to be doing that kind of work. And so now if there's engineers that are actually going to be involved in some of these conversations from both the state and local level, they should be able to say, you know, what kind of studies need to be done in advance, you know, how the work should be done. People are very curious about, you know, how they can try to pull off the same thing they already did in the past and it failed. And how is it going to be any more successful this time? Sure, okay, it's winter, things are a little more frozen, but where they want to build this temporary on-ramp, there's a pond, there's wetlands, the ground is very soggy. What's going to keep it from not giving way under these 1.6 million pound monsters? They're actually going to be moving uphill away from the lake. What's going to keep that disaster from happening? There's a lot of engineering questions. There's a lot of environmental questions. And the public should at least, especially since we elect and pay certain officials to have the expertise that they'd be able to share with us, if we could ask questions, we should at least have the opportunity to ask questions in a public fashion and have that knowledge be public.
1.6 million pounds each. Now, does that make it the largest tar sands load to go by road through the Northwest in terms of weight, these three loads?
Yeah, likely. From what knowledge we have of it over the last decade or so, it's probably the heaviest loads that have ever come through. And they are going to a tar sands refinery. So even though a certain Forsgren Associates, a third-party engineering firm that has done bridge analyses for ITD and various heavy haul moving companies, asserts that, oh yeah, they're not going to the tar sands, went out of their way to make sure that opponents of this project knew that. They never once stated that the refinery in Great Falls, it's a subsidiary of Calumet, and the refinery is called Montana Refining Company. They process 100% tar sands at that facilities, which is very toxic to the people that live around there due to the byproduct of pet coke, which is a fine coal-like powder that gets in the air and is full of all kinds of heavy metals and carcinogens. So, you know, there's even environmental health issues involved in at least the destination of these megaloads, if not along the way as well.
Do you recommend people submit questions in advance?
It's a good idea. We need to push back on projects that we don't think are good for the citizens of Idaho as much as we can in whatever format we are allowed, but we still should also push for a very open public hearing where everyone's questions are heard and all the answers are heard as well.
That was Helen Yost of Wild Idaho Rising Tide speaking about the planned meeting hosted by Moscow City officials tomorrow afternoon with representatives from megaload hauling company Mammut, the Idaho Transportation Department, and area police agencies. The two-hour meeting will begin at 3 p.m. at City Hall, and city officials are asking that all public comments and questions be submitted in writing in advance to an email address on the City of Moscow website or on paper in person in advance. Rap legend Chuck D will give a speech at Spokane Falls Community College tomorrow morning as part of Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebrations at the school. Chuck D, who has rapped for 25 years, mostly with the group Public Enemy, will speak on race, rap, and reality. The event is free and begins at 10 a.m. Doors will open at 9 a.m. at the Building 15 Music Auditorium on the Spokane Falls Community College campus, located at 3410 West Fort George Wright Drive in Spokane. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, it'll be partly cloudy tonight, low 32, and then mostly clear skies tomorrow through Saturday, with highs around 44 tomorrow and Thursday, 42 Friday and Saturday, and lows around 30. Currently fair skies, 40 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is This Way Out, the international lesbian gay news magazine, followed by Flashpoint, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, coming up at 6:30. Music with Dave Wheeler starting around 7:30, and music and entertainment throughout the night here at KRFP Moscow. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow.